Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Tom Frenchy screams towards Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase. Go fuck yourself. And I am a sports entertainer.
Welcome, everybody, to Eat, Sleep, Elite. I am Charlie, joined, as always...
Well, that was like sing-songy. That was crazy.
...by the extravagant, the wonderful, the Duke of Dubs. How's it going there, buddy? So, vibes are fucking high, of course. It's a post-pay-per-view. It's post-AEW pay-per-view.
We have post-nut fucking clarity right now.
Genuinely, fucking set for the week. No, fuck it, A. Today, it was All Out, AEW All Out. As always, the pay-per-view quite literally ended about 5 minutes ago. Hangman Adam Page just walked off the stage. So if, you know, there's Brawl Out 6.0, we're not going to have it for you. Fortunately, we won't be covered by it.
Punched out by a Maxwell on the press, yeah. You know, Mia Scrum. We won't know about it yet.
So, yeah, we won't know about it, but, I mean, hey, maybe if something hits the wire, we'll fucking know, but we're going to go through the pay-per-view beginning to end.
We technically knew about Brawl Out last time, we just didn't talk about it because
Yeah, it was like so much fucking misinformation, we're like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And half it turned out to be true, but just real quick, overall thoughts, like we like to do first. Duke, how are you, feeling about the show? We had fifth ever AEW All Out.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So we did have a little bit of connection issues when we were watching the show. So if we missed anything, that's the reason why. Excuse me. But I will say my biggest overall thoughts, super overstuffed pre-show. Don't know why. I mean, I'm not against these people getting on the show, by the way. Don't get me wrong. It's just this was already a very underbooked show because of it only having 2 weeks of build and them not building up. Them not doing what they had done in previous years and building up both pay-per-views at the same time, which I do think worked out for All In this case. I think All In felt like a way bigger show because of that, but All Out feels like a way smaller show because of that. You know what I mean? So, but that's okay. That was just going to have to move the date like a couple of weeks back. That's all I can think. You know what I mean? Like that screw up the rest of the schedule, I'm sure, but they can work it out. You know what I mean? Like they got to fix this because that's my biggest complaint going into and coming out of the show is that nothing really mattered going into the show because we didn't have time to build it. You know, so I would have even been in favor of them moving the Darby Allin matchup. You know what I mean? Not that the match that we didn't get for the title wasn't good, but I think it would have added some, like, we've been building this up. You know what I mean? Like, but at the same time, I do think all the matches on the show were really good. I don't think there were any bad matches on the show.
No.
So, well, what were your overall thoughts? Because I really enjoyed it. Like I said, this pre-show was like a little fucking thick, but I mean, yeah. You know, we do really enjoy a thick pre-show from time to time.
Yeah, of course. And I'm with you. I mean, I am at least glad that they're trying the, you know, 2 weeks instead of 1 week like last year, because that was just ridiculous, booking both shows at the same time. Luckily for them, I think that the television shows have helped these feuds, you know, mainly Hangman, MJF, and I guess the Ospreay stuff, I'll say, and Mercedes.
I guess they were banking on the idea that the Ospreay versus Pac match on paper was going to carry enough weight, that the MJF versus Daniel Garcia was going to carry enough weight coming out of All In, that you were going to want to see that match away, right?
Absolutely.
And also Danielson being champion. They thought there were going to be some factors that they could get away with it, and I think they do.
And it went over much better to me than last year. And of course, let me correct myself also. This is the sixth All Out. I was blanking on 2019 for some reason, but yeah, this was the second ever pay-per-view for the company. This is the sixth All Out. But yeah, well, let's get into the actual show. I think I'm with you. I really enjoyed the show, especially the wrestling. 0 Hour. Okay. Kind of the main things of note here of the Acclaim defeat the Iron Savages. And we have the Costco guys show up. And, you know, if you guys haven't seen them before, they're like just fun little TikTok family, if you will. I saw some people being like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And I'm like, well, more people are going to see this that are casual viewers.
Obviously, you never saw the Bayley This Is Your Life segment.
Yeah. And here's my thought on a lot of this shit. these guys, it's a dad, his son, and like it's the whole family. They're really popular on TikTok. Like I'm seeing them traveling to campuses, to Barstool, and they're more eyes are on these guys right now, straight up, than AEW.
Look, man, this is just pure Tony Khanism, which I mean, yeah, you can just have to
bring him in at all.
Here's the thing. We brought in like the fucking linguine, fucking pasta, fucking rots, that guy, like the guy that fucking spun pizza as his wrestling gimmick. And he had a match on, wasn't it on like Rampage or something? He legit had like a match. It wasn't like he legit had a match, but he was in the match. Like he spun his pizza a little bit.
Yeah.
It might've been a dark match. They had him on because he was a meme. You know what I mean? And they were like, fuck it.
Exactly. And the dad's a former wrestler. So it's like,
fuck it. You know, give him a dark match. No, I'm just kidding. Don't actually do that.
It doesn't hurt to bring on fun shit like this. It simply can't hurt it. And yes, it's cringe. That's their whole gimmick. The dad knows it.
Bro, WWE cringe is so much worse than this. Like, remember the fucking Mountain Dew Dark? Not to denigrate the memory of fucking Bray Wyatt, because obviously legacy is almost impeccable. But he did have a Mountain Dew Lights Out match. Right? And that, to me, is much worse than this. Like,
yeah, than a little two-second pre-show. We also had Dustin Rhodes, Sammy Guevara, and Hologram. Shout out to fellow Hologrammers. Defeat the Premier Athletes.
Bro, made the tape.
Yeah, Hologram made the tape. Hologram, of course, looked like a star on fucking Rampage, so that was cool.
I feel like he looked good here, too. You know, like, I don't know.
Yep. Bang Bang Gang defeat the Dark Order. Dark Order, you know.
And who cares, match? Why is this happening? What?
They're still struggling. Tony Schiavone welcomes Sky Blue to the stage. She's on crutches. Have a broke her ankle a few months ago on Collision. She's holding up a lot of sentimental meaning to her. 3 years ago, Khan offered her a spot in the Casino Battle Royale. Mariah May interrupted. She says she's out here to have her AEW Women's Championship celebration. It's called the Windy City. She knocks her over. Out comes Queen Aminata, saves her. So setting up that program.
I think the first program for Mariah.
Awesome. Yeah, and Queen Aminata's fucking had a really, really good year in the ring. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Undisputed Kingdom defeats Shane Taylor, Lee Moriarty, Beast Mortos, as well as Top Flight, the trio. Just a party match. You know, big party spots. Everyone had their fun. Beast Mortos hit his tornillo. That was really fun again, of course. And, yeah, just that's your pre-show. You know, yep. Welcome into the – it's really
for – warming your jimmies up for to be jostled a little bit later, you know?
Yeah.
They knew what we were opening up with, so we had to get the jimmies a little rustled, but not too rustled, you know?
We open up with the longest reigning AEW World Champion, MJF, taking on and defeating Daniel Garcia. The crowd was having fun with this match. He's our scumbag. No, he's not. Daniel Garcia really hates him, and you could feel it. They did the Billy Robinson, Antonio Inoki spot. That's always really, really cool to see, but also makes you scared for your life. They're spitting at each other's face. And it's all about hitting the pile driver off the top rope. It's kind of, you know, Daniel Garcia wants to return the favor. MJF wins the match via low blow. He goes to, you know, do a post-match handshake. Danny fucking sets him up, kicks him in his shit, spits in his face, avalanche pile driver, light ovation, runs into the crowd and celebrates within the crowd. Look, I'm not an expert, but I think that means he's staying. I could totally be wrong. I think that means Danny's staying. That's my gut. I thought this was a good match. I think we need to see them run it back. They left it open to run it back. Both these guys deserve a high-tier program, and this is one of the highest-tier programs Daniel Garcia can get that's not a world championship. So he's facing the longest-reigning world title. He's facing MJF, a day-one OG. You know, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the match, and I think their next one, we will look at it, and it will be better. So, but any other thoughts you had on this match with our boy Danny?
I think the thing that you were both reacting to the most was a couple of different people. Actually, him and Jack both had a couple of moments. We'll talk about it when we get to Jack's match later in the show. But they were both selling their asses off for the guys they were in the ring with. And MJF already is really good and doesn't necessarily need you to sell because he's just that good. You know what I mean? Like, you can have a semi-decent match with MJF, but like it's kind of hard, right? Like he's very good. You know what I mean? So, but I mean, Danny's one of the best wrestlers in the world of his age. You know what I mean? Certainly, if not one of the best in the world, period. You know what I mean? So like, I think I really enjoyed everything everything that they did. And I think that this is an example where, like I said, I think they got away with the fact that this story was booked so short because it was technically booked all the way back when Danny was out 8 weeks ago. So technically there has been an 8-week build to this program leading into this pay-per-view. You know what I mean? You know, and it included an entirely separate storyline between MJF and Will Ospreay. You know what I mean? So, like, it's actually like, you know, I have to give them credit where it's due in terms of the storyline booking there, as well as the conclusion, as well as you said, to leave it open for a possible another match in the future. And yes. I think you would be silly to not at least have these guys run it back for a couple of pay-per-views in a row, considering how over they were.
This is such an easy Grand Slam match with them both being from New York, too.
As well, yeah. I mean, you could run this all the rest of the year, realistically, and into the next year, and it'll be, you know, it'll be still hot, I think. And if it starts to lose steam, then you have one of them win and you move on. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So.
And this is kind of the scope of tonight being this pay-per-view really focused on.
Does it feel to you like Danny is elevated after this? I feel like even though he didn't win, I feel like the fact that he.
Yes, his stock feels fucking hard.
Rub. If he had to rub off of a guy like MJF, pause. But anyway, you know, he did. You know, like, I feel like that's as big of a deal as. Leaving MJF laid out like that injured is something that not many people have done in the history of AEW. You know what I mean?
Agreed. And it did elevate him, in my opinion. It's a good thing. And I think this was the start of the night where we opened up this show and they really set a staple on this show. Wrestling being.
That's violent, appropriate.
Being about hatred, right? These guys hate each other. Matt Menard on commentary calling out his fucking. Do it for your mother, Danny. You know what I mean? I think this match wanted you to have an emotional reaction, and it delivered. Fucking 24-minute match, too, by the way. Just going out fucking doing it.
It just we glided along, too. It didn't feel like it was done at all.
This was the match that we had the most problems with tonight, which was, in terms of our stream, the Young Bucks defeating Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta retain the AEW Tag Team titles. The bits we were able to watch, it was, you know, classic fun stuff you would imagine. Good tag team action going on. EVP triggers doing easy shit to get booed. You know, kind of your Nick Jackson running a little wild, Claudio running a little wild. Everyone kind of got their own little spots, right?
Bro, I gotta be honest with you. Can I be honest with you? Is this gonna get me shot by the AEW fan base? I feel like they're not the Young Bucks that I'm used to seeing.
No. They're definitely not, and I think it's partially character and also...
No, I mean, like, in terms of, like, in the ring, like, I feel like they're not hitting that level that they hit, like...
No, if anyone... I'll be honest. I don't think that this... Compared to All Out 2021, their match against the fucking Lucha Brothers, compared to this, it's two different teams. Now, what has gotten us there, I don't know. I still believe...
I don't think that had anything to do with the backstage shit. I think they were over that... When they first came back with Kenny. I believe that. You know what I mean?
Like, agreed. I'm with you. I don't know what it is. Maybe they're tuning down their style just a little bit. But it's still a good match.
They are getting older. That is a legitimate thing. One of them is going to retire at some point, you know? Yep. So, like, and when the other one retires, they probably retire too. I mean, you'd be thinking, because Matt's the younger one, right?
Nick's 3 years younger.
Sorry, Nick's the younger one. So, would Nick wrestle without Matt? I don't think so. Like,
I think he'd just be an EVP.
Yeah, straight up. And then I think that would be fine, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, this was fine. I mean, I'm going to need a second watch of this because I did miss out of 15.
You know, I want to see the full breadth because that might be why I'm so harsh about it, because I missed a lot of it and I didn't get to see the full. So,
yeah.
But I mean, from what I saw, I feel like I've seen this like every match, you know, I will give them the one on All In. I thought that was fine. You know what I mean? But that also did feature FTR. So, you know, like. Not that would give them all the credit, but I think those two teams being in a match, it's going to be good regardless of who the third team is. You know what I mean? Like, no offense to the Acclaim, but I guess the Acclaim could have fucked it up, but I wasn't expecting the Acclaim to do that either because I consider them to be a good team. You know what I mean? Like, so, but I don't know. But this was still a good match. I actually really liked the finish.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It was the cradle and pin on Yuta from Matthew. So,
I mean, yeah. I mean, but the problem, this kind of suffered from the same problem that a couple of the other matches did as well, which is that, like, there's no way in my mind that the person is losing their title. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And it's like, that's unfortunate. Even Will, to an extent, you know what I mean? Like, it felt that way, you know? Like, even though that match, I guess, could Pac have won that? I don't think so, you know? Now with Will just winning the title back. So it's like, but I mean.
Well, let's jump into that one.
Yeah, sure, 100%. Because I definitely want to talk about this one.
Title match where Will Ospreay defeats Pac to retain. And Nigel had a brilliant call here where he kind of calls this type of match the epitome of the sport. And he couldn't be more right. This match was absolutely incredible.
I mean, Escalera de la Muerte was pretty insane, I think.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And Will Ospreay, at what point does he have a stinker? Is it possible? I don't know.
It's possible. They've never put him against somebody that will happen
this
with, though.
Year.
That they're smart enough with how they've booked him. Okay, can I say this and not get shot by the AEW fan base? I think that this is the reason why is because they've booked Will in such a protected way. And that's a good thing, by the way. That's not necessarily protecting your fucking baby face, your biggest baby face in your company. Sorry, everybody else, but it's the truth. You know what I mean? That is something you have to do at some point. Look at Roman Reigns the last several years. You know what I mean?
He came in, we knew it was going to be special. We knew it was.
Yeah.
But
was it going to be this special, though? Did we think that?
The run he's had this year, and when I clarify this year, I'm going to include the New Japan stuff. I'm including the Josh Alexander match in TNA. That was probably my
favorite Michael Oku match.
The Michael Oku match. We often see people reminisce about 2019, Kenny, for all the right reasons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, bud.
But this is up there.
It's going to be very hard to
outshine Pac here. This Pac was fucking incredible.
Yeah. That's what I love about Pac. This is why I often will. Okay, what do I say to you during every time we're watching this guy wrestle, Charlie? What is the one thing that I always say? Do you know what it is off the top of your head? Because if not, I'll just tell you. But it is literally every time we watch a match with this guy, I'm like, why is this guy not featured every week on AEW television? This guy puts on insane matches, and you can put him in there with all of the best wrestlers in the world, and he does not look out of place. I think this was another example of that. I think it's a valid question. If we were going to do a poll, I mean, we're not doing like a traditional episode this week, but if you feel fucking froggy and throw a poll on there, you know, the question could be like, you know, would you guys want to see a full-time Pac in AEW where he's showing up every week and we're getting storylines with him? Because I think that could be incredibly successful. I think he gets over with the crowd, even if it's like a bastard, you know, he's still...
I think the build...
He's almost a baby face to an extent, even though he's a bad guy, technically.
He is. Like, the build to All In and now. So really his return being... had what? The Leo Rush... He returned and faced Danielson, right?
That sounds.
Is that where I'm at?
Right.
That was in July. I don't know if he disappeared again after that, but
I'm not sure. That's why I often will say he kind of goes and comes and goes, and I'm sure that has to do with the fact that he's obviously, I'm assuming, still living in the UK, right? But even if he does do that, you could still show up, you know, book some time over here.
Whenever
he
returned to start the all-in build,
yeah,
I think the crowds warmed up to him even more.
Well, because they've been using him week to week. That's why I think it's kind of proving
my
current point.
Fucking champion, which still feels
that helps
weird
a lot.
He doesn't feel associated with that group yet, but we'll get to
that. We got there, though. They did actually – they remedied that. So, yeah, I think they remedied that,
but
so that's good.
Again, I think this is just another one of those examples of every match Ospreay's had on pay-per-view this year, it's a certified
Would it be crazy to say that every match on pay-per-view he's had this year could be considered match of the year? Pretty much. How are you going to argue another guy for wrestler of the year this year? It's going to be difficult. Ryan Danielson's having a great year. But, like
– and what's crazy is that's – Danielson's having one of his, you know,
this might be his career year too. That's the crazy thing. This might be Danielson's career year as it is last year, and he's potentially going to have neck surgery at the end of the year, which you have to factor into the fact that he's still going at this high level while having to have neck surgery later this year, right? You know,
yeah.
But then you also have Will, and every pay per view, literally since he's been in the company. And the pay-per-views that he wasn't even in the company, going back to before he was, I mean, not that I'm a factor into this year, but I mean, like, you also have to, like, and people will be like, the New Japan stuff and the Rev Pro stuff, that shouldn't count because it's not AEW. Here's the thing, though. We watched everything Will did in his leaving of New Japan heading into AEW because we knew going into this year that he was going to be coming to AEW. And that was something that we told the people that listened to this podcast at the time that we were going to do because we considered it to be part of the AEW canon that was going to be – because that's the way they were setting it up. Will almost basically told us that's what was going to happen. He was going to finish out what he was doing in New Japan. And that was going to lead him straight and do his stuff in AEW. So much so, he picked up stories that he had left for years in Japan. You know what I mean? So, like – I mean, like, you know, like, it's
insane.
And where we're headed now, too, it's incredible because, like, God, like, you know – there was that part of me that was like, are they going to do the thing where Ricochet, you know, gets like, you know, like
half-feuding. They're going to give that match unbelievably amounts of respect.
Oh, I think the match will be good regardless. I think the fact that it's happening in AEW, that's fine. I'm not worried about the quality of match. That's
already a fucking green line for it, because you know they're going to be able to get
that. They're getting the green light. They're getting the time. They're getting whatever they want, right? They make it the main of fucking event or something. You know what I mean? Who knows? But here's the thing, right? Is I was like worried that they were going to like not be able to help themselves, and while Pac was going to get his match still, they were going to like not really, but they corrected that on the Dynamite, where he just, you know, what do you call that, poison Ronism up on the ramp or whatever. So they were like, no, we're focusing on this. Ricochet could be there in the background, but this is not about Ricochet. This is about Will Ospreay and Pac. And that made this match feel more important to me. You know what I mean? Even though it was booked. This, again, I have to give them credit. They gave Pac this title shot, in a random match, and they carried it over. They said, nope, this is the next thing. You're doing this first, and that we're not letting other stuff get in the way. And they booked it ahead of time. So I can't actually say this was one of the few matches they actually put some time into getting before the actual show was booked. You know what I mean? And it didn't feel like Will was feuding with like six people at the same time and they were doing that. You know what I mean? So they can't actually do that. And I guess I haven't really talked about the match itself. Obviously, it was insane. The two of them were like two of the best wrestlers in the world.
Athletic showcase. They got to a point where they were countering each other so much that
it was confusing our friend that doesn't watch wrestling. He didn't know what was happening. He was very...
That was so cool. That was so cool. It's cool sometimes when you get a glimpse of other people that don't watch this, and he's like, I've never seen a wrestling match like this. It's like an acrobatic, you know, performance.
I was like, are you enjoying it? Like, that's how you know you're about to become a wrestling fan right there, when you're having that moment. You know what I mean?
That was good shit, and just very, very well. Congrats to both of them. In a normal year, this would easily be a top three match of the year. That's how good it was. However, it might not even be the best match on the show. And that's just kind of shows you the fucking year we've had. Okay? It's fucking ridiculous. Let's get into this. And I'm going to tell you right now, this is my women's match of the year right now. As it stands right now, Chicago Street Fight, Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale, where Chris Statlander defeats her in a brutal fucking slugfest of a match. It came out. This was a way day for Chris Statlander. She knew she was the enemy. Willow was the babyface. And I knew we were in for a match when we get a massive pounce before it even starts. No one called that, by the way. Commentary was a little hit and miss tonight. They were great in some places. In other spots, they missed here. They were arguing about New Jack being on the chair, which, you know, that was a cool homage. You know, rest in peace, New Jack. That was a cool homage to have. But they're arguing about it instead of calling this massive, beautiful move Willow just hit. It was no need to. Yeah. I thought this was a whole lot of fun. They had pretty innovative spots with the tacks. Just spearing each other through fucking tables was really neat. They brought that viciousness that I think this feud really needed.
Chris Statlander broke a fucking hip when she took the one like spot on the table where it moved, and she kind of like fucking like almost like double axe kicked Willow over the top. You know what I mean? Like, it was crazy.
Yeah. And I think this was in a feud that I wasn't in love with their previous match. The one for that CMLL title. I wasn't in love with it, but I had a gut feeling we can do better. And sure enough, we fucking did. And Statlander won with a tombstone, choked her fucking with a chain. It's just very, very good. When women are in these street fights in AEW, they have not missed yet. I think it's 10 for 10 now. I saw the graphic of all of them again. It was floating around on Twitter after the match. And I was like, yeah, every single one of them's been a banger. And that shows the quality.
We might have to start having a conversation about AEW street fights in general, because I can't remember the last time we had one that was like truly like just a stinker. You know what I mean? Like,
it's how they must just be really, really smart about how they produce them. And they know that they don't want to just go out there and have a couple kendo sticks to the back and call it a night. No, if we're going to go out there, we're going to make it a memorable match on the card, in a card that had all these incredible
fucking
matches.
I think with those things, it's kind of like the same thing as like a death match, right? A death match can be really silly, or if you put the spots in the right place and you sell the moves correctly, it can be just a match with some gory spots in it, which we got to like basically that later in the night. You know what I mean? So,
yep. So any other thoughts you had on that one, or moving on?
I think Mercedes is on, or not Mercedes, sorry, I think Willow and Chris Statlander are both like on like actually like, I feel like it's weird. I feel like this feud for some reason just hasn't really gotten there. like the whole time. It hasn't had the gas.
It's definitely not as much as people had hoped it would.
Yeah, and I feel like it could have, maybe, I don't know what it was. Maybe it's just because it was like in the background of other stuff going on and they just didn't have, it was one of those things that just kind of like got backburnered. I don't know, but I mean, the match is, like I said, you said, it could be like women's match of the year for you. I really enjoyed it. I think, weirdly, I think both of them coming out of this are going to be in a better place. I mean, Willow will probably have to be, you know, I mean, she'll probably take some time off TV, I would think. Not like a ton, but like at least a little bit. Or maybe she'll be right back. I have no idea, but I can say that about, we did that for 6 months about Orange Cassidy, and then he was back and has never left. So, you know.
Yep.
So maybe I just don't know. But, you know, I did enjoy what I saw here. And I think the women are all around kind of killed it tonight, actually, to be honest with you.
100%. 100%. So that was when Renee was backstage with Will. Shay ends up watching him, says he's not collecting a paycheck. He's going to collect some wins before it comes after Ospreay. So I expect some week-to-week Ricochet building his resume up to challenge for a title. So when you see people asking, why is this match happening? Well, A, it's a wrestling show. B, he's building his resume. So pretty simple stuff there. It's what you make it, right? It's what wrestling is. All right, we had a Continental title four-way. So let's get this off the bat here. I was telling you this when I first started watching the match.
We're not like, actually, we'll talk about the match briefly. It's like, it's a good match, but like, let's actually talk about the stupidity of the whole match in general first.
Yeah, so our Continental title, which has specific rules to it, it was a four-way match, which when the bell rung, I'm like, wait a minute. Are we sure we're doing this with this title? I'm okay with finding things for convenience. It was a fun match, sure. However, the whole gimmick of this title is that it's supposed to be a tournament-style match. Huh. They've made it four tournaments. It's named after the tournament. It's going to be defended in the tournament in, like, you know, 10 weeks.
Yeah.
You don't have a tournament match four-way. That really doesn't exist.
No, and, like, the whole idea
I will give them this. They did do a three-way in the tournament because of the way the seedings went. I'll give them that. But that was during the tournament.
That was a tiebreaker in the tournament, though. That's different than like...
Exactly. I'll give him that. So if someone wants to be like, well, they've done this before, I'll give you that. That's fair. However, it just seemed, why not just do Takeshita and Okada?
Well, like, we got to establish how the actual rules of the title work, right? Because like, if we're going to go with it, it has to be like the tournament matches where you would... Because the thing about that triple threat, Charlie, was like, if you had interfered in that triple threat, you'd have been fired or fined. So like... Yeah, it was a triple threat. Technically, there were no rules, right? And you could be like, you know, like, right? But so theoretically, if Eddie had been in that match, he could have lost both his titles, right? So, like, but I mean, like, here's the thing, though. Like, if that's how it's going to work, you can't have a four-way match that then somebody could theoretically interfere in and then not get in trouble. Because that kind of breaks the whole idea of the title.
Well, the goal rule being you can't interfere in a Continental Rules match, which no one did. I'll give them that. They didn't break the rule, but I don't know. It felt like
opens the door for just throwing out the entire rule set, which it is does. Something.
It sets a standard. I don't want them to go into it. Look, if this is just a tiny little thing, I get it, but I like the idea. You know, we have one-on-one matches, and we had the very, very special three match. That's fine, but. Anyways, that little nugget out of the way. I thought this was a fun little match. The Okada Takeshita face-off got a massive reaction, which I was hoping it would. It's, you know, they have two massive Japanese stars right now. One that was the ace in New Japan and one that's a future ace, whether it's of New Japan, whether it's of AEW, right? He was already the ace of DDT at 26 years old. He is the fucking guy. And I was a little worried with Don Callis being out there. He was going to try some shenanigans and break the rules. Luckily, they didn't do anything with that. All right. But, this was fun. Everyone kind of had their fun little spots, whether it's the conglomeration getting their shenanigans in or Okada getting the victory. I actually, there was a moment during the match with how it was going. I thought they might take this thing off Okada and put it on Takeshita. Once Okada got Takeshita out of the ring, he got him out of the ring. I was like, okay, that makes sense. So he didn't pin him. He pinned Orange Cassidy. Yes.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, fun little match. Not the best match on the show by any stretch of the imagination, but it was fun. It was a fun little four-way. It was our only match that wasn't a one-on-one, you know, outside of the tag match, of course. So, yeah, any other notes you had on this one or thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, really, again, same kind of complaints I had about everything else. Like, I was just in my head, I was like, I don't think Okada's losing this. And so, and it just so, like, slapped together that, like, it's just like, yeah, I mean, couldn't really invest in it. And it was like, yeah, Okada's probably retaining, and we'll move on from that because there's nothing else really to add. I mean, it was a good match. Just, you know, there wasn't a lot of build, and probably nothing comes out of this realistically, you know, unless you do the Takeshita match, but we got to get there first.
The Takeshita match has to come out of this. That has to be the Grand Slam match. They got to make a big show for Grand Slam. It's in, what, 3 weeks? So let's, we can already kind of see where the card's going. And I think they should have a pretty fun show with that. It makes me wonder, why was Mox searching for Darby Allin? Maybe he's going to try and bring him in. I don't know. Anyways, we have Mercedes Moné defeating Hikaru Shida to retain the TBS title. This match is going pretty damn well. It got a little clunky there at the end, but it was going pretty freaking strong. I gotta tell you, I was really digging it. This was better than their Dynamite match. It had a little more time to breathe, I thought. I really, really love Mercedes. And when they started doing the, like, super stiff slaps and forearm spots, I'm like, this is the shit I've been wanting from her, and I'm excited to see from her more. Shida knocked the piss out of her on one of those three knees. I don't think the other two were landed perfectly, but the, oh my God, there was one she stiffed the holy fuck out of her. So, yeah, I like Mercedes winning here. This is actually one of the results I really wanted to happen. We've talked before plenty of times. Sometimes I like the hotshot Hikaru one and stuff. I don't think I would have liked it if they did here, just because I think we're building something really special with Mercedes right now.
Well, it's like Sheeta's almost like, not to use a comparison to somebody that's like actually an actual shitbag, but it's like the Brock Lesnar meme of like just showing up winning the title. That's kind of like what Sheeta does sometimes.
Yeah, she's done it before.
You know?
Now, what'd you think of this one?
I enjoyed it. Like, I think Mercedes is like on like a roll right now. And I think that's not going to end anytime soon. I don't think that he's even going to get snapped when she takes when she drops the title either. I think whatever she does after that will probably be just as big as whatever she's doing with the title. I have no idea who she's going to drop it to, because Sky Blue's injured right now.
I mean, she's that level of star.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I'm just, you know, excited to see who they're going to pair her up against next, I suppose.
Yeah, hard agree. Okay, jumping into, we have our World Heavyweight Championship match. We have Bryan Danielson defeating Jack Perry to retain. Okay, what the hell did you think of this absolute awesome fucking match between Danielson and Perry? First off, we got Perry in Chicago as well.
True, yeah. And then there were, as far as I could remember, I mean, there were some fuck Jack Perry chants, but there weren't any like CM Punk chants, so there's that. I guess the CM Punk fans have all migrated to the Fed, as they should. And yeah, I mean, it was a really insane match, like you said. Jack Perry sold his absolute ass off. I alluded to that earlier on in the show when I talked about the other match that I mentioned, that with Daniel Garcia. And I really enjoyed watching Jack Perry just sell the absolute piss out of Bryan Danielson's knees. And I think Bryan Danielson has kind of like figured out like a magic formula, like a sorcery or something like that he does in the ring. I can't even describe it. He's not even doing like insane, like he's not even doing like what FTR do, which is just like really, really fundamentally sound wrestling. Like, it's not even that. It's that there's that in there. He's really fundamentally sound, right? But like, it's, I don't even know. It's like a fucking hypnotic dance that he's doing out there while he's wrestling. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, it's, and then like Jack Perry is like, I don't even know. It's like he's fucking jazz or something like that. And you mix those two things together, and it's like a symphony mixed with jazz, and like you'd think it would sound like horrible and like chaotic, but somehow it's like a fucking beautiful symphony, you know?
Yeah. I think Jack Perry, we have been one of those podcasts. We often like to talk about pay-per-view Jack Perry and how great he is on pay-per-views. We've given him his credit for many, many years now. Some people still don't like to do that, but that's something that we've always tried to, even if we didn't like his week-to-week storylines, it's like pay-per-view Jack Perry was always fucking hitting. Christian Cage match is the one I always like to point to. Like, that is proof. That's all you needed. He was a bona fide star in that match. His selling of the fucking Psycho knees here were unbelievable. All three of them were different. All three of them looked like a fucking flailing corpse. And all three of them, I actually believe this young man was just knocked out by a fucking knee from the running goat. Okay? Let me tell you this. What I feel like there was a lot of smart ring work in this one, right? I feel like everyone was really, everything was really calculated by both of them. I was believing in Jack Perry being the heel here and actually, you know, thinking he has a chance to take over Danielson. And this was a classic kind of long world championship match that it started out slow, built throughout it. They sold very well, sold to the final moments, and we had a big go-home splash with Danielson hitting the Psycho Knee and putting him down for good, right? So, post-match. Okay. Yeah,
this is where all the fucking explosive diarrhea happened. Not in a bad way.
No, of course. We open up the post-match with a Luchasaurus and Perry kind of confrontation. Seeing those two in the ring together, it immediately brings back like these emotional, you know, nostalgic feelings in a way, because we've seen them look at where they're at now, right? Luchasaurus was just Trios champion. He's been constantly featured. He's been a TNT champion. Being with Christian Cage has elevated his stock so much. Jack Perry is now the scapegoat, and seeing those two in the ring, I was like,
the current champion, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, current TNT champion. Yep. On the hottest run of his career, he's a legit heel, and he's making it work. He just, you know,
a member of the elite, which, I mean, you know, people will piss on that, but like, that's like a fucking legitimate thing in the wrestling business. No one else has ever been added to the fucking elite besides him and Okada. So, you know, I mean, like, you know, other than the original group, I guess, and Hangman, but whatever.
So we get that. We get the Christian Cashin attempt. Moxley intercepts him. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, oh my God, the Blackpool Combat Club, those guys are out of, they chased them out during the match. Oh no. But it caught my mind, like, Moxley's still there. We know Moxley's there. We saw him enter the building. They didn't do that for nothing. Or did we? Was that on Collision? Maybe I'm mixing things up. Either way, Moxley, I figured he was there. Christian Cage backs up. Nick Wayne's pissed. Luchasaurus is pissed. They all go into the ring, the new Blackpool Combat Club. They have a brief reuniting. Claudio uppercuts him. Danielson's face is 10 out of 10 selling from Danielson. It's 10 out of 10 acting. You believe that his best friend just turned on him. Moxley becomes evil. Killer Yuta's acting. My God, dude. It's like he couldn't believe it was happening. He's like, no! He's holding him back. Our pack's holding him back. Marina's in there. We got the new group. It's like they usurped the throne but didn't tell him. JR is unbelievably disgusted on commentary. The crowd is chanting, this is murder, as Danielson's getting choked out with a paper bag or a plastic bag. I can't tell you the last time I've been this stunned by an angle that I just didn't expect. I did not expect this.
Shit, there was an angle a while ago where they ended like that. It was Tony Khan getting a pile driver. That was what it was, I think. The last time we were... And Dad Khan coming out.
I don't even know if that hit this level because of how emotionally we're attached to the Combat Club. And the mystery of it all. Why didn't they tell Wheeler? What's Marina's deal in this? Like, I thought this was genuinely perfect. As perfect of a segment as it could have been. I can't wait to see where it goes. Just any other thoughts I'm missing on this that you
got? Yeah, I mean, the only thing we haven't really touched on is, like, we mentioned at this point in the show when we were watching it that we were like, we needed some spice. We were looking for the thing that was going to be the headline drawer coming out of this show. And this definitely, the main event is going to be a part of it, but this is definitely probably the big thing coming out of tonight that people are going to be talking about is new Blackpool Combat Club, Jon Moxley turning on Bryan Danielson. Wheeler Yuta probably still being aligned with Bryan Danielson, presumably. And
Still walked out with him. He's just upset at him. I think they're going to do something where Claudio knew he couldn't tell him because he didn't want to break his heart like that.
Look, I don't know what they're going to do, but I just know this, that whatever it is, it kind of implies Bryan's not going anywhere anytime soon, because if he were, why would you start this angle right now? It'd be kind of like very William Regal to do that, but I don't think they're going to do that with that, the way people react to William Regal. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I could be wrong about that too, though. You know, you never know. Go out like your heroes, right? You know?
Yeah.
You know, but really, really good angle to end this match. And, I mean, obviously, we're going back to Bryan Danielson versus Jon Moxley, or possibly Bryan Danielson versus Claudio. But I mean, we're both.
Yeah.
I mean, shit. And we still have a match with Darby Allin on the docket. So.
And we're bringing Marina in the mix. Where she is.
And Darby Allin is involved in this also somehow. Like we were talking about, oh, is it going to be Moxley or, you know, Claudio. Well, we know that Darby is, he wants to talk to Darby. Darby already has a title shot.
What's he want with him? What's he want with him? Yeah.
I'm just saying, maybe Darby joins the Combat Club and that's who faces Brian with the title shot with the Combat Club. I'm saying. But I don't know if you do. Can you pull off a heel Darby? I don't know.
Yeah.
Would the way he was left after Jack Perry at all and him to that and then would that lead him down that path?
Lead him down that path. Yeah, I would love it. I really do. I'm still kind of stunned by this segment, which takes us to the main event match, our lights out steel cage match, where without a shadow of a doubt, the most violent match we've ever had in AEW. We've had some violent matches. We really have. This blood feud deserved it. We haven't had a show since Dynamite, but Dynamite ended with Hangman burning Swerve's house down, his childhood house. They did a big press release about this house. Swerve's new contract, he bought his house, and it was a big moment. It was picked up by actual news outlets. Like, this was a real thing that was put out. Hangman burns it down that night. Throughout the week, I've been seeing it on, you know, various wrestling sites. Maybe it's from that. Maybe it's from hype from All In. All of a sudden, All Out was selling kind of weak. It was.
Yeah.
Flash forward to tonight. I mean, I don't know if we have anything official yet. I'm sure Tony Khan will talk about it, but it was looking like they were nearly selling the fucking thing out from there. It was at the beginning of the week. It was like the weakest kind of All Out that we've had in terms of tickets. And it might still technically be when it's all said and done, but people cared. They moved for this program. They moved for maybe Ospreay and Pac. They moved for all of it. And I think these guys, their blood feud, it is my favorite feud in AEW's history. I think I wanted to see one more match before I gave it that, you know, just to see. I've loved it. I've loved it since the jump. We both gave it feud of the year last year, right? It was definitely our favorite feud of the year in 2023. And now here, that, I mean, I think this is the end of it for a while. We've seen Hangman Adam Page go from the happy-go-lucky guy to he's, I mean,
it's going to be hard to beat this again this year, too, to be honest with you, because it's carried across multiple of the major feuds, too. You know what I mean? Like, so.
And it culminates with this match, and Hangman Adam Page has gone maniacally insane. And yeah, just, I guess, any other bits of the match you want to talk about before we get to this? I wrote down the finish in total. Yeah, we'll break this down, because I think this is the most ridiculous finish I've ever seen.
Nothing super specific, but I will say this. Okay. I think these two guys have done something that I don't think has been done, even by Jon Moxley. As much as Jon Moxley will hate me saying this, not that he's ever going to hear it because he doesn't pay attention to that kind of stuff, but like, you know, if he somehow heard it through the grapevine or something like that, I think Jon Moxley has been trying to do what these guys are doing for the last, like, however many years of his career, which is innovate this style of match in a way that actually not only, because I think the thing that Moxley doesn't want to do is just wrestle death matches. I think that's what a lot of people in their mind would think. No, I think what Jon Moxley wants to do is the thing that Swerve managed to get to with AR Fox back in Lucha Underground with that Stages of Hell match or whatever the fuck it was. Like,
yeah.
That match reached where it did because, and I have never seen a single second of that feud outside of that. But you know what? By the end of that match, I got the story of that match because through the process of the brutality and the different insane spots in that match, you understand the level of hatred and vitriol. And it had a great, phenomenal ending to it as well that left you wanting to know what was going to happen next and so on and so forth. You know what I mean? Like, and I think this is the only, I think Swerve and Hangman Adam Page, maybe they're the only people that have taken the, I'm not going to call it a death match, the sort of lights out, sort of unsanctioned, sort of, you know, I mean, death match is the only real technical term for it, if there is such a term in wrestling, you know, like, but that sort of style of match, which I don't think has been innovated since like the Japanese wrestlers that did all the death match innovation that kind of carries over into the style that we see nowadays. You know what I mean? Like, I think these guys are changing the game with that stuff, proving that this kind of stuff can really enhance a story when you're given the right tools and you tell the right kind of story. Because the kind of feud that these guys have had has been so fucking personal. I mean, like...
Yes.
And that's the level you need to reach to do these things. It's what I've said for years. And people will be like, oh, well, you're just saying that because, like, if you don't do something all the time. No, it's not the same thing as not using something all the time. But when you use something like this, this kind of match, this kind of story, in the right scenario, when you've built it up with people's houses being burned down and broken into and, you know, stuff like that. Like, when you do that, it makes those moments when Swerve is being, power bombed onto a cinder block. You feel that for Swerve, because every time you've seen Swerve get knocked down, you've seen him get up. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like they reached a level that I don't think wrestling reaches often in this match and with this feud over the last couple of years. And I think one day people are going to look back on this, even if AEW is not still around, and look at this and say, wow, it's incredible that they were managing to do that while like everything else that was going on in the world at the time, but that they managed to find that within. And I think there's something resonant with this story, that there's a frustration within all of us right now that is kind of resonant with the way Hangman Adam Page feels, right? And the way Swerve felt when he first, confronted Adam Page like 2 years ago or whatever it was now, I guess it wouldn't be 2 years ago, but like a year or so ago now, you know what I mean? Like it's, I'll stop rambling here because I'm just kind of going and going, but like, it's
good points. It's true. It's showing how much, we often on our other show, Eat, Sleep, Elite Fantasy, shameless plug, where we talk about, whether it's books, movies, television, whatever. The first thing we always ask each other is, how did that show make us feel? And wrestling, it's about how it, honestly, it's no different. What did this match physically make you feel? Are you Don Callis and physically excited? Sure, you could be.
Well, that's just because I'm a pro wrestling fan, though.
Of course. And, last year, a lot of shit was being thrown around and, certain ways things were being booked in the main event scene specifically. And it's like, when we have this violence, this hatred, this anger, feud, and not every feud needs to be like this. Look, I love a fucking, give me a romantic comedy fucking storyline and it's great. I don't care. I'm just saying, this feud specifically.
Oh, MAX fucking, what's his name? Nick Wayne, yes.
There you go. And it's like, we have this instead of kangaroo kicks right now, main eventing are all out and shit like that. And it feels different. And I think also, this is why you let AEW, they got their early company fucking growing pains out. In 2020, a fucking champagne match.
And by growing pains, you mean CM Punk?
Sure. That they had to grow out of that. And I think, and partially to people online, they're still growing up. There's some people that still mention him every time, like, they're talking about AEW to try and, like, get a dig at people. It's like, I don't, okay. Most of us
have already. Guys feuding over a bracelet. It worked out real well for him.
Like, most of us have already moved on. Like, we're doing our own thing. Like, yeah. Like, dude, if they want to have blood feuds over a bracelet, do your thing, bro. But I am going to stick to a blood feud about, burning down someone's childhood fucking house. That was fucking metal. Let's get to the finish of this match, because I don't think the finish of this match was like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. So, Prince Nana, Hangman Adam Page. First of all, during the match, there's incredible spots. We could go through a bunch. I mean, stabbing each other, literally. The cinder block spots are some of the fucking nastiest shit I've seen. It was just unbelievably brutal.
Stabbing each other with a burned remain of the childhood home of Swerve Strickland.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. And so there's a house call flush to the head of Hangman Adam Page against the cage. Another house call hit. Hangman Page ends up kicking out. Swerve goes to the top, gave a look to the top of the cage, went to climb. Hangman cuts him off with an awesome bomb. Deadeye follows. Strickland just kicks out. Hangman Adam Page is demanding Swerve to beg for mercy. He's punching and beating him in the head repeatedly. Prince Nana pleads with Swerve to think about himself. Swerve starts laughing. He's holding up two fingers to remind Hangman he's up 2-0 in their fights. You can't beat him. I beat you twice. He collapses. Page takes his grill out of his mouth. Grabs a syringe, sticks the needle through his mouth, it's poking out the other side, injects it, fucking chair shot to the dome in one of the most fucking disgusting sounds, like ECW type fucking sounds. Oh my god. Brutal chair shot. He looks legit dead. Paul Turner calls off the match. Knockout. Hangman Adam Page wins. Commentary said they hope Page feels they're even. He looked down from Strickland. He walked up the ramp. He walks, he just starts like getting like super crazy fucking looking face, screaming at the camera, and that's how the show goes off air. And it was, I don't think I've ever seen a finish like that in terms of the build to it and how it hit. It was very unique, and taking the grill out with the syringe and the fucking chair shot, and just, he legit knocked him out and killed him in terms of, you know, the match. And what a night for fucking AEW. What a night, man. And I hope that I don't hope that Costco kid was front row. He might be scarred, or he might want to jump into the business tomorrow. So I don't know. Hit me with the ending of this and let's fucking, we'll get out of here. But yeah, just any, give me some
thoughts. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, incredible finish. Like, it'd be really hard to not, like I said, put this as your match or feud of the year. Again, you know, it's just, it hits levels, like I said, that other stuff doesn't. And they're, like I said, innovating this style of wrestling in a way that I don't think has ever really been done. And it's, I don't really know what else to say about it besides that, because like they are like, you know, I often like, we'll just talk about wrestling on the weekly wrestling reviews, you know what I mean? Because that's kind of what we do, you know what I mean? But like, when you're talking about these pay-per-view matches, I almost feel like an onus to like talk about with them a little bit more reverence what these people actually are capable of doing, because it's one thing to be able to deliver a match every week. That's difficult enough as it is. It's another thing to be able to deliver a quality match every week, right? And it's another thing beyond that to be able to do that every week consistently, and then also do it so well that people are interested in watching what's going to happen with you, building up a story that people actually invest in, and then taking that story and then building a match around it that people can then invest in the actual story of the match and carry that into the energy that they need to create the big, massive moments. And I think this storyline was integral to Swerve becoming world champion. And I think them running it straight back as soon as being the reason why Swerve lost the world championship, that wrote itself, you know what I mean? And I think, and what I mean, crazy to say that when Swerve inevitably comes back from being what I'm going to assume is injured in this match, right, in storyline, right, that they probably are going to pick up.
He deserves a little bit of, even if it's like 3 weeks, he deserves a vacation.
Yes, but when that 3 weeks is up or whatever it is, I want them to pick this right back up.
Okay.
Because I think that the 2-1, that looks a little wonky. I think maybe that means Hangman has to win another one and then we fucking blow it all off in the fucking last pay-per-view of the year or something, you know? Like,
yeah.
Or you don't do it and you leave it as it is and they go their separate ways and Swerve just comes back and does something else and we then have two guys and now elevated even further beyond what he ever was before, Hangman, who is now the most dastardly heel in the company, probably.
Imagine this Hangman trying to end Danielson's career right now.
Yeah, that could be the direction we go in next.
Fucking awesome.
That could be one of the, look, we are all assuming that this is going to be a short run for Danielson. What if he's a fucking champion for like a year? You know what I mean? We could do everything. You know what I mean?
I mean, that
could
be one of the things we do. To the dome at Wrestle Dynasty.
You just never know. You know what I mean? Like, and so either way, I really enjoyed this. I'm really excited to see where they both go next. I would imagine Hangman Page is going to be featured on Dynamite this week and probably put into a high profile storyline, I would think. But I don't actually know that, so we'll see. I would like to think that you're going to carry this momentum into something, right? But, you know, who knows? Yeah, is there anything else you wanted to add here at the end? I just fucking enjoyed the show.
No, I think that's it. And I just want to say a thank you to everyone if you're checking us out for the first time. Hope you enjoyed our show. We keep it raw. We keep it, you know. These are literally just off-the-rip opinions. The show just ended where it's like the way we kind of view our show is we're just kind of having a conversation and bringing everyone in with us and yeah, it's just fun to talk about. So we will be back. We're not going to have a regular show this week because it's, you know, pay-per-view week and we just did a show now. But the following week, we'll be back. We will, just like we did for All In, I thought this kind of worked. We're going to have a double set of favorites from this past week of AEW, which there are some really fun matches that I think deserve us talking about. They deserve their spot under the fucking sun, right? So, and then we'll be back with our normal show that following Tuesday, which I believe is the day before Agatha comes out. So, yeah, if you guys are interested in Agatha All Along, we do ESE Fantasy. We're going to be covering it there. We're going to do our week-to-week release with that. So, yeah, thanks again for checking
us
out.
What episode do we have queued up to come out this week, out of curiosity?
Our next episode is the Three Body Problem series review. So,
Interesting.
Yeah, if you guys watch that and they're like, what the fuck are your thoughts about that? Because you guys are probably going to let some shit rip. You already know we did. That one's already in the can, you could say. That bitch is, that'll be up Tuesday morning. So, yeah, if you enjoyed this, hit that follow button, and we hope to catch you around for the next Eat, Sleep, Elite. That being said, thank you very much. Wardlow, take us home, man.
You didn't make a pay-per-view.
You'll get booked someday this year, I promise.
It'll happen.
You'll get booked again, bro. Wardlow, please take us home.